Grace could even reply, there was another bang. She got up, opened the curtain a fraction, and peered towards the door. She could make out a shadowy figure. Annabelle joined her, pulling the curtain further back.
He doesn't look like an axe murderer, she said thoughtfully.
Do axe murderers knock?
Grace whispered. They looked at one another and burst into nervous laughter. As Grace turned again to the window, trying to get a better look, the man glanced across, staring straight at her. She stepped backwards in shock. It was the man from the pub. She was sure of it. And now she had seen his face. Her memories shifted, forming an old picture. She had opened the same door to him 12 months earlier. She could still remember how her hands had trembled as she let him inside. It's okay, she told Annabelle. I recognize him. She headed through the hallway and opened the door. The man on the step was short and thick-set, his face red from the cold, his eyes watering in the wind.
Now then, Grace.
It's Niall, isn't it?
That's right.
He looked pleased that she remembered.
Can I come in for a minute and have a word?
Grace turned to see Annabelle brandishing an umbrella, as though ready to use it as a weapon. Her stance jolted Niall into understanding.
I'm sorry, love.
He ran a hand over his face.
I didn't mean to scare you. I was caught unaware when I saw you at the pub. I couldn't place you right away, but when I realised who you were, I reckoned I'd better come up and see you.
He held out a hand to Annabelle.
Constable Edwards, call me Niall.
He was much smaller than Grace remembered, but perhaps the uniform he'd worn when they'd first met had made him more of a presence. His eyes were the same, though, extending an unspoken compassion that Grace found as unbearable now as she had a year ago. In his presence, it was impossible to pretend that nothing was wrong. She realized they were waiting for her to speak. Come in, she said, and stepped back to let him through. Annabelle, this is the policeman who came round first on the night Adam disappeared. Niall waved away Annabelle's offer of a drink. He sat on the edge of his chair, his hands clasped between his knees.
How's your little lass doing?
She's fine, Grace replied. She's asleep upstairs.
That's good.
He looked pleased.
I've often thought about you two, you know. I have to say, I didn't think I'd see you back round these parts.
Grace stiffened. There are things that need sorting out. I want to tie up the loose ends, so Millie and I can move on with our lives.
Well, that's fair enough. I kept an eye on the investigation, and I don't think much has changed.
No. Grace looked into her wine glass, swirled the liquid, and took a large sip. I haven't heard from the police recently. Niall's sigh was sympathetic.
It happens, I'm afraid. When there are no new leads, a new case is coming up all the time. Everyone's scurrying about, overworked and underpaid. Did you have a family liaison officer?
Yes, Ken Barton.
Have you told him you're back?
Grace shook her head. No, should I?
Wouldn't hurt. But listen, I won't keep you.
He got to his feet, then fumbled in his pocket and pulled out a piece of paper.
Have you got a pen, Andy?
Grace found one for him. He scribbled on the paper.
If I can be of any help to you while you're here.
She looked at the mobile number scrawled on the scrap he'd handed to her. Thank you.
I've two lasses of my own, and I've always found it hard to believe that your husband just ran off that night, leaving you bairn on the step like he did.
Grace's jaw felt tight as she replied. I know. I can't believe it either. She wanted to add more, but couldn't find the words. Niall nodded.
Well, I'll leave you be then.
He turned for the door. After they had seen him out, Annabelle considered her sister for a while, then said,
Are you going to tell me?
Grace frowned at her. What?
Come on, Grace, Something's bothering you. Spit it out.
It's nothing. Grace ran a finger around the rim of her glass.
Well, why don't you explain, and then I can decide that for myself.
Grace looked squarely at Annabelle.
It's just...
The day before Adam disappeared, he went out for a few hours. He said he was going to watch the Arsenal match at the pub in Octon and do some Christmas shopping afterwards. But then, while I was in France, I heard Dad grumbling about how many games Arsenal had at the end of the season because of all the ones cancelled for bad weather around Christmas. I went on the internet, and the game had been cancelled that day.
Right. So?
Annabelle looked uncertain. Well, he didn't tell me that.
Perhaps he just went shopping instead.
Maybe. But he didn't come home with any bags. There was nothing on our credit card. I never found any presents hidden away.
Why didn't you say something earlier?
Dad convinced me it was nothing. Said he probably watched another match instead. I rang Ken Barton as well, but he sounded as skeptical as Dad. There was a big local derby on that day, apparently, which went ahead, and all the pubs would have been showing it.
But you're not sure?
Oh, I don't know. They're probably right. But seeing Niall reminded me of it, that's all. And I keep racking my brain, looking for anything suspicious. And that's the best I can come up with so far. They sat in silence for a while, drinking their wine.
You could mention it again when you next speak to Ken Barton,
Annabelle suggested. I will, Grace agreed, but doubted she'd be taken seriously. Anyway, her dad was probably right. It was such a tenuous lead, and she had to be careful not to embellish her memories with meanings made from hindsight. Her mission was daunting enough as it was. Chapter 9. Annabelle left early the next morning, keen to avoid the Sunday afternoon traffic on the long journey to London. Soon after she had gone, heavy rain had begun to pound the windows, and so far showed no signs of slowing. When Millie was settled for a lunchtime nap, Grace sat down in an armchair and began to reflect on everything that had happened since she'd returned. Gradually, the fizzing of her mind abated, and she fell into a half slumber. An insistent banging catapulted her awake and sent her springing from her chair. For a moment she was confused, before she realized with a rush of relief that it was only someone knocking on the door. It would be Ben, calling about the renovations.
Hello,
he said, taking down his large black umbrella as she opened the door. Bess sat next to him, droplets shimmering at the tips of her wet, clumpy fur, her tail wagging.
Can I leave Bess here?
Of course. Ben led the dog underneath the porch, and Bess shook herself, water spraying from her coat.
Bess!
Ben cried in exasperation, jumping out of the way. The dog wagged her tail eagerly, and he laughed and gave her ears an affectionate scratch.
Stay,
he instructed, and Bess immediately lay down. Grace was still a little wary of Ben after what she'd witnessed at the pub, but as she watched him with the dog, her concerns dissipated, and she stood back to let him in.
So, what are you planning for this place?
He asked as he followed her through to the kitchen. Grace pulled out Mike Muir's drawings and a few rough sketches of her own.
These are really basic, she said as she gave them to him,
half embarrassed by her simple designs. But Ben sat down and began studying them carefully.
Ah, I see what you're thinking. Knock out this wall.
He banged the wall next to him.
And you've got a nice cozy area. And sort out the bathroom upstairs so it's ensuite. This looks like a good plan.
He glanced up. Want me to do some proper drawings for this, and then figure out the best way to go about it? Grace had gone across to the kettle.
Well, we'd better talk money before we get too much further. I've only begun thinking about this recently, and I need some idea of how much it would cost. Ben folded his arms and looked down at the sketches for a while, without saying anything. I'll tell you what. Let me do the plans for nothing, and we'll figure it out from there. Grace was taken by surprise. Ben's expression was unreadable, but not unfriendly. As she looked at him, she noticed that his eyes were framed by grey circles, and there was a melancholy aspect to his face that struck her as almost tragic. A Heathcliff, she thought, and couldn't decide if the current that ran through her was fear or something else. You don't need to do that, she said. She thought he might smile, but he just said, I know, and began to browse through the papers again. To be honest, you're doing me a favour. I'd be grateful for a project to keep me busy at the moment. He raised his eyes to meet hers. Okay. Grace felt off balance, his suggestion sweeping her ideas along much faster than she'd intended, and she faltered under his direct stare. Well, if you don't mind.
Can I take these?
He held up the loose sheets of drawings. Of course. Would you like a drink? Ben shook his head as he got up.
Don't worry about that. Why don't you give me a quick tour of the place, then I can get out of your way.
All right then, Grace murmured. He came for work, she reminded herself, not to pass the time of day. She showed him the upstairs rooms, careful not to wake Millie. As they came back down the stairs, Ben gestured towards the corridor and said,
What's in your cellar?
Grace spun round. What cellar? She asked in confusion. Ben had diverted his course, heading for a small wooden door behind the stairs.
This cellar, he said as he rapped on it.
I thought that was a cupboard, Grace answered.
Are you sure it isn't?
For the first time since he'd arrived, he smiled.
Pretty sure. You've never looked inside then?
No, she said. It's locked. To be certain, she lifted the old-fashioned latch and pulled, but the door didn't budge. I've never seen the key. She tried to recall what Adam had told her. She was sure he hadn't contradicted her when she'd asked about the cupboard under the stairs. He'd said it was locked, and they needed to find the key. That was as far as they'd got before he disappeared. She'd told the police that it was a cupboard when they'd searched the place. They'd wanted the key, but they must have forgotten.
Do you want me to pick the lock for you?
Ben offered.
Ha ha. I'm serious.
Misspent youth, hey? He smiled again, and this time it was briefly echoed in his eyes.
Something like that. I need a paperclip or a safety pin.
Grace went to find a paperclip. Ben inserted it into the keyhole and slowly moved it around. There was a click. Then he twisted the handle and pulled open the door.
There,
he said, holding it ajar. Grace looked past him. Sure enough, steps led away from her into blackness.
Have you got a flashlight?
Ben asked, as he felt about for a light switch. Yes, she replied, but she didn't move. The thought of what might be down there had caused panic to spring up from nowhere. She felt sick.
Want me to take a look?
He offered, seeming to read her mind.
Yes, please.
She ran through to the kitchen to get the flashlight. When she returned, Ben took it from her, flicked it on, and headed down the stairs. She didn't release her breath until he called up.
It's mostly boxes.
Giddy with relief, she peered down to see a beam of light illuminating what looked like pile upon pile of odds and ends. Come and see, he suggested. Tentatively, she moved inside, letting the door swing shut behind her. Then she began to make her way down carefully,
hands pressed against the walls that closed in on her from either side of the staircase. When she reached the bottom, she said, "Ben?
Hang on."
His voice was alarmingly close, but the flashlight was flitting over the wall. She remembered the old couple's faces in the pub last night, how scared they had looked, and her mouth went dry. Had she misread him completely? What was she doing down here with this man she barely knew? Another flash of panic overtook her, and she blindly whisked around to head back up the stairs. As she did so, light flooded the room.
"I thought there had to be a switch,"
she heard Ben say to one side of her.
"Why the hell did they put it down here?"
She swung to face him. Ben caught her expression before she could recompose herself, and she saw his astonishment fade into something more like disappointment. He switched off the flashlight and put it into her hand without meeting her eyes.
"I'll wait for you at the top,"
he said, then took the stairs two at a time, his upper body tense. She surveyed the small room, now lit starkly by a white bulb dangling overhead. It seemed like it should have a chair in the middle, with someone tied to it being interrogated. But the reality was far more mundane and wearying, because everywhere she turned, she saw junk spilling out of boxes and cupboards, oozing from shelves, just piles of assorted debris and dusty rubbish. She grimaced, hands on hips, considering the amount of extra work she had found in this one small space. Then, taking note of where the light switch was, she pressed it and used the flashlight to guide her back up the stairs. Ben was leaning against the corridor wall, waiting for her.
"You okay?"
he asked, his tone kind. She threw him a guilty smile, feeling silly for panicking, and grateful he was being so gracious about it.
"I think I've just found a few months' work,"
she said dejectedly.
"You might be right. It looks like they literally threw stuff in there. What a state."
"I know.
You could always lock it again and tell everyone it's a cupboard."
She tried to laugh, but could only manage a weak smile. "It's tempting. Still, at least I know what I'm up against now." As the conversation died away, Ben seemed to decide that it was his cue to leave.
"Right, I'll take a look at all this."
He waved her notes in the air.
"And come and see you again in a day or two, when I've got something to show you."
"I really appreciate it." Grace followed him to the front door. "Are you sure I can't get you a drink?"
"I'm fine, thanks,"
he said. As he opened the door, Bess got to her feet.
"I'll see you soon, Grace."
Then he was gone, with Bess trotting next to him, and Grace was left staring at the empty garden path. She went to make a cup of coffee before deciding to investigate the cellar again. This time, she grabbed a couple of heavy books, using them to keep the door ajar. As she headed down, she wished she could afford to pay someone to empty the place and save her the stress. But she didn't want to spend money on jobs she could do herself, especially now that her savings would be stretched with the renovations. At least Annabelle would be back soon to help out, although she imagined that Annabelle might have convulsions if she saw the state of this place. On reaching the bottom of the stairs, she moved swiftly over to the far corner. Something had caught her eye there earlier. Two battered cardboard boxes she thought she recognized. She hadn't wanted to check them out in front of Ben, but now she opened one of them and stared miserably inside. They were Adam's mementos, a cricket statue, an old t-shirt with handwriting all over it, the jokes and scribbles of teenagers elated at their impending freedom from school, and a collection of Arsenal programs. The problem was, Grace had seen these things before. They had been in the London flat she and Adam had shared. She remembered him packing them up, which meant he'd brought them down here last year.
So it looked like he had known there was a cellar after all. "Damn you, Adam," she cursed aloud. As soon as she'd spoken, a distant noise began, as though in response. She paused, listening. It was the long, determined creak of a door moving towards its latch. Grace dropped everything and raced towards the cellar steps, taking them two at a time as the shaft of landing light quickly diminished. If the latch clicked into place, she would be stuck. There was no handle on the inside, and she had a flash of horror at the thought of Millie alone upstairs. She reached the door when only a fraction of light remained, pushing it back, giving a cry of relief when it moved obediently. The books she had used to hold it ajar had moved slightly, and she set them back in place and added two more, before sprinting down to turn off the cellar light, then racing back up again. The door's weight had pushed the books away, she told herself, once safely back in the corridor, gradually recovering her breathing. The timing was spooky, that was all. However, there was no way she would be going down there again on her own. Chapter 10. The day's events weighed uneasily on Grace's mind as she sat in the living room, watching Millie's little hands slowly turning the pages of a picture book. Why hadn't Adam told her about the cellar? Did he have something to hide? Her father was convinced that if Adam had been about to vanish, there would have been warning signs. But Grace had always been adamant there weren't. Adam had been his usual self on that last morning, joking around, his face glowing with pride each time his glance fell on Millie. It was a new look in his eyes, one that Grace was still getting used to, but it was already among her favorites. He was minding Millie for the afternoon, while Grace did some shopping in town. It was the first time she had left Millie for so long, and she was both excited to be going and reluctant to leave. By the time she got home, laden with bags, Adam had taken Millie out, leaving her that strange, serious note, and she had never seen him again. She had always imagined that something drastic and shocking had occurred that day. But what if her husband had been hiding the truth from her all along? The boxes in the cellar were her first real indication that Adam had deliberately misled her. And if he had lied about them, what else might he have told her that wasn't true? Her memories were beginning to splinter. The Adam she had known and loved, the man who could read her moods and raise her spirits with a few perfectly chosen words, was becoming overlaid with another Adam, whose sincerity was deeply questionable. Were his jokes designed to divert her attention? Were his reassurances a calculated method of keeping questions at bay? And were his oversights, his omissions of important information, a deliberate ploy to deceive her? The more she thought this way, the angrier she became towards both of them. Him for being so callous, herself for being a fool. But was it true? It was all too easy to think the worst of Adam when he wasn't here to defend himself or explain. If only... She bit back the longing that made her lip tremble before it turned into distress. She needed to shake off these cloying fears, go down to the cellar and explore further. But as she thought of its dim, dusty corners and recalled the sound of the door slowly closing, she knew she hadn't the nerve for it. She wished Annabelle were here to lighten the atmosphere and talk her out of these ridiculous thoughts. Instead, she listened as the rain turned to ice, the hailstorm hammering on the window panes in cracking staccato bursts. All around her, the shadows of the room languidly stretched themselves out, resettling as the darkness grew. She jumped as the upstairs landing creaked, another of the cottage's strange nocturnal echoes, and turned on all the lamps so that cozy light filled the room. She sought to tear her mind away from its never-ending loops of questions by taking Millie up for a bath, then getting her ready for bed. After Millie was settled,
Grace headed downstairs and switched on the TV, wanting distraction. She avoided the inevitable horror stories on the night's news, grateful to come across an old film, until she realized it was Rear Window. Even though she'd seen it before, tonight she needed something safe. So eventually, she settled for a few old episodes of Friends. After they finished, she switched off the TV and was left looking at her reflection in the blank screen. She was slouched on the sofa, a blanket over her legs. She looked like an old lady, slumped there alone. She made her way up to bed, got undressed, and settled down under the duvet. She flicked off the light, then waited for sleep to come and claim her. But, as she feared, nothing happened. So she switched the light back on and read some more of Rebecca, imagining the second Mrs. De Winter sitting under a chestnut tree, contemplating the fickleness of time. For a while, Grace was there too, breathing in the scent of fresh-cut grass, hearing a bee buzzing close to her ear, the sea murmuring in the distance. She grew drowsy, so put the book to one side, switched off the lamp, and closed her eyes. Against her will, her ears attuned to the noises in the cottage. Every now and then an unexpected creak would startle her. She could also hear a faint scratching and feared she really did have a mouse. She didn't know if she could bring herself to set traps and decided to ignore it, concentrating instead on the ticking of the grandfather clock. Its steady rhythm slowly infiltrated her mind, lulling her into a slumber. And then the clock stopped. She opened her eyes to the darkness, listened more intently, but all stayed silent. It had just wound down, she told herself, but the hush had distorted the atmosphere. She closed her eyes again, but she couldn't relax. After a while, her ears began to ring from the effort of straining when there was nothing to hear. My grandfather used to call it the heartbeat of the cottage. She rolled over and snapped on the light. For a second, her vision quavered, the walls shifting slightly before settling. Then the room was there before her, just as it always was. Why had she expected it to be different somehow? She peered round from behind the covers, but nothing moved. Yet the atmosphere felt full of energy, a living current swirling around her, willing her to get up and go downstairs. She opened the door to the landing. She snapped the light on and edged along to the next bedroom to see Millie soundly asleep, face to the wall. She looked down the stairs, thinking fleetingly of the cellar two stories below. She decided she'd go and turn on the television again, find some company that way. And so she made her way down to the living room and switched on both the fire and the TV. Then she went and closed the curtains so that not a tiny crack of darkness could peek through. She needed to fortify her surroundings, to make believe that she was in a different room, somewhere else. London at night sprang into her mind, the brilliant neon glow of it, the electrifying bustle, people always passing by. Sometimes, she felt that this place was the dream, and soon she would wake up and find herself in their old flat, listening to the distant thumps of music, the regular rumble of traffic, and she would only need to turn over to see Adam asleep beside her. There it was, the familiar spasm of pain at the thought of him. She shook off the fantasy and flicked through the channels until she came across a late-night music program. She tried to concentrate on the soothing rhythm and blues, but found that she kept turning down the sound on the remote, checking to see if she could hear anything. Finally, she stomped back into the hallway in frustration and stood before the grandfather clock, its pendulum still, their faces level. The air around her was so chilly she could see her breath. It hadn't been that cold before, surely. She had imagined that it would be a blessing once the clock stopped. But now she knew what Adam's grandfather had meant. Without the incessant ticking, the cottage was too quiet, too still. She sighed. And as though in reply, the pendulum suddenly moved, and the clock gave a loud tock. She jumped backwards in shock, disbelieving, holding her breath. But when the noise came a second time, she fled upstairs, crawling rapidly under the covers and clamping a pillow over her head. Chapter 11. The next morning, when Grace looked out the window, she saw snatches of blue beyond the sheet of bright white cloud. Instead of frost, the hedgerow was covered with shimmering droplets of fresh dew. A robin perched on the garden gate. It bounced this way and that, flicking its tail, before it sensed her watching, froze for a moment, and took flight. Despite the fact her sleep had come in stolen, shallow snatches, nothing looked terrifying today. Rather, the small garden, with its trellis arch and flagstones, sundial and pond, was a picture postcard image of country life. She heard Millie staring and went to get her, walking past the grandfather clock, which was now keeping up a steady beat, as though nothing had happened. When they'd had breakfast, Grace decided that the washing up could wait. It would be good to get outdoors while they had the opportunity, to give Millie some fresh air without snow or rain to impede them. So she put Millie into her sturdy stroller and set off up the hill. She found herself slowing as they approached the red brick house where Ben lived. Grace studied it from the opposite side of the road as she drew closer, remembering what Meredith had said, and tried to imagine what Ben's wife would be like. She hurriedly put her head down as the front door opened, but she couldn't help a few sidelong glances in that direction. At the far end of the garden path, a woman with long red hair and a thick woolen coat had emerged through the front door. Ben was behind her, and she turned back to pull him into an embrace. As Grace looked on, Ben wrapped his arms around the woman for a brief moment before she walked down the path with Bess trotting behind her. Grace hurried away to avoid being spotted and continued up the hill. A few moments later, a large estate car roared past. Grace continued following the road, enjoying the fresh air as it rushed into her lungs. As she walked, she found herself relishing the peace and quiet. There was little movement around her, just a few wet sheep huddled together next to a low stone wall. She leaned over the top of the stroller to see Millie sitting forward, surveying the surroundings. It was nice to be just the two of them, tackling the next phase of their life, striking out together. She couldn't wait until her daughter started to talk, but Millie only made strange sounds at present and hadn't really begun to babble. Grace didn't know whether to be worried about this or not, since she had no benchmark by which to compare Millie's progress. As soon as they were settled, they could join a playgroup so that Millie could meet children of a similar age and grow in confidence. Grace had heard her friends talk about playgroups, where people endlessly compared their children's developments. It sounded exhausting, and while Grace had been pregnant, she had imagined all the playdates and coffee mornings she'd be going on with a mixture of enthusiasm and trepidation. However, it seemed all those emotions had been a waste of time, since in the end life hadn't worked out that way. Grace kept up a steady pace as her thoughts flitted from one thing to another, and when she eventually refocused on her surroundings, she found they were some distance from the cottage. The day was beginning to lose its colour as the clouds swelled and darkened. "I guess we should go back," she said, leaning over the stroller again to find that Millie had fallen asleep. She smiled at the sight and headed for home. When the row of dwellings came into view, she saw that Ben was leaning over the open hood of the Land Rover. He glanced up at her approach, an oily rag in his hand, and then bent over the car again. For a moment, Grace thought he was going to ignore her. But as she got closer, he stood up, using another cloth to wipe his hands clean.
Grace, I'm glad I've seen you.
His voice was loud and deep against the silence of the morning.
I did some work on those plans last night. Come in for a moment and I'll show you how far I've gotten.
He held open the gate for her, and she wheeled the stroller down the path.
Do you want to leave her here?
He asked as they reached the porch. He began to open the front door, saying,
No, Bess,
as a large black nose poked eagerly through the gap. Grace looked behind them at the empty road and felt her nerves clench at the idea of Millie out here alone. I'd rather she was inside, she said. Can we lift the stroller in? Ben helped Grace carry Millie's stroller into the hallway. Grace checked her daughter was still asleep, then followed Ben as he took hold of Bess's collar and led them both through to the kitchen. The countertops looked scrupulously clean, unlike the cottage right now, she thought, with its scattered crumbs and half-empty mugs. Bess settled herself on a large square pillow in one corner, while Ben went across to a drawer, pulled out some papers, and laid them on the bench in the center of the room.
These are only rough ideas. I'll need to get measurements of everything, of course. Would you like a drink?
Just some water, please, Grace replied. She began studying the papers. On some, he had done a few simple line sketches, but on others, he had gone further, drawing the entire living room so she could clearly see how his suggestions would work. It was amazing, she thought, that he had remembered so much detail after one visit. The fireplace had become the central feature of the main sitting area, while the wall between the living room and kitchen was replaced with a bench top that could also be used as a breakfast bar. Ben brought over a glass of water and put it down in front of her, glancing at the papers.
This area is multifunctional, he said, tracing the detail in one of the drawings. But it will make the space downstairs a lot bigger. You could leave the outer stone walls as a feature, rip out the carpet, and put in a really nice wooden floor with a big rug. I'd suggest wooden floorboards for the downstairs hallway too. And then replace the carpet on the stairs with something a bit more luxurious. Rebuild the fireplace so that it's a real feature of the living area, and get a flat screen TV so that it doesn't take up unnecessary room.
He pointed to another corner of the living room.
That nook there, full of books. You could also make much more of that by putting in a few decent shelves with downlights and adding some ornaments. Fit a seat into the bay window at the front with a few cushions, and the same upstairs. Repaint the hall banister, easy, and then tile the bathroom too if you can stretch your budget. The big thing upstairs is adjusting the bedroom so that the master is at the back with a better view and has ensuite access. Then it's just fixtures and fittings and sorting out the furniture.
Grace was trying to keep up with him as he flicked through the various sketches. After he'd finished, he looked at her. She shook her head. I don't know what to say. This is amazing. I can't believe you've gone to so much effort and got so far with it already. I'd barely got my head around knocking down the kitchen wall. She beamed at him. It's brilliant. I love it. I can picture it all so well. Looking at how you've laid it out, I couldn't fail to. I'm completely sold. When can you start? Oh, God. Please tell me you're not horribly expensive. He laughed, a deep, rich sound Grace hadn't heard before.
Don't you want to check out some other options first?
Not anymore, Grace smiled. But I really have to pay you something for all this work, so include it in your price, will you?
No.
I said I'd do it for free.
As for the rest, I'll work out the estimated cost for materials, then how about £100 a day for the labour. For a full working day, I mean, he added. This will all take a good few weeks, so I'm happy to get started as soon as possible.
Grace was dumbfounded.
She remembered the expressions of the old couple in the pub and stalled for a moment, finding his gaze inscrutable as he waited for her response. Despite what she had witnessed, her instincts detected nothing overtly threatening about him. It was a generous offer, one she would be foolish to turn down.
"That sounds like an absolute bargain," she replied. "I think perhaps you should take a bit of time to think about it, work it out properly."
Ben's face became serious again.
"I have," he said. "That's my price.
I'm looking forward to doing it, so when do you want me to start?"
"Well, I guess as soon as possible after New Year's, if that's all right," she ventured.
Ben seemed confused.
"I thought you were keen to get on with it. It's only the middle of December."
Grace was taken aback.
"Well, yes. But I assumed you and your wife would be busy over Christmas. New Year's will be fine.
I've got lots of boxes to go through anyway. You saw the state of the cellar."
Now he appeared astounded.
"My wife?"
"Oh," Grace floundered. Meredith told me that you and your wife lived here, and I thought I saw her this morning. The woman with the long red hair."
His expression changed immediately to understanding.
"No, that wasn't my wife you saw. I think Meredith must be confused. I'm house-sitting for the owners. They've gone overseas for a while and they wanted someone to look after the place, what with Bess and all."
"Oh," Grace said. "Oh."
"Say something else," she cajoled herself, "so you don't look like an idiot."
As she searched for the words, Ben began to gather together the papers. Grace went to move her glass of water out of the way, but fumbled and sent it flying towards the drawings. In a panic, she reached out and managed to tip the glass away from them, only to knock it towards herself. The water splashed the front of her coat, while the glass shattered on the tiles.
"Oh no,"
she said, staring in dismay at the jagged slivers on the floor. In the hall, Millie began to cry. Grace looked at Ben, her cheeks blazing.
"I'm so sorry, I'm such a klutz."
"Don't worry, I've got a dustpan and brush somewhere."
She hoped he would smile, but his face was solemn as he began searching in cupboards. Bess got to her feet, wagging her tail and looking curiously at the kitchen floor.
"Stay, Bess,"
Ben told her sternly. Meanwhile, Millie wailed louder.
"Sounds like you need to go,"
Ben said, and he grasped Bess's collar and guided her out the back door.
"I'll clear this up in a second, after I've helped you out with the stroller."
Grace hurried down the corridor to Millie, her face ablaze with embarrassment. Ben was right behind her. He opened the front door and helped Grace carry the stroller down the step. When he'd finished, he knelt down and smiled at Millie, stroking her cheek briefly with one hand. At his touch, Millie quieted, eventually giving him a shy smile in return. Grace watched them both in astonishment. He straightened up as he said,
"So, how soon do you want me to start? I could probably knock down the kitchen wall before Christmas if you like."
"Really?"
To Grace, the task looked onerous, yet he talked about it as though it would be simple.
"Can I come round in the morning and take another look at it? Check it's not a bigger job than I think it is. But yes, I reckon it's manageable, if you're prepared to live upstairs for a few days."
Grace thought about it for a moment. This was decision time, her last chance to run away before she made a proper start on things, before she got other people involved and would have to see it through. Then she felt the courage she had been cultivating for the last year rising firmly above her fear, and she smiled at Ben and said, both to him and to herself, "Right then, let's get on with it." Chapter 12. That night, after Millie was safely tucked up in bed,
Grace was finally able to continue her search. Adam's omissions were piling up like stones in the stream of her convictions. He hadn't told her where he'd put the money, or where he'd been the day before he vanished. And now, it transpired that he'd kept the cellar a secret too. Was all this circumstantial, or an indication that she didn't know him as well as she thought? These worries were hard to bear, and the only way to combat them was action. She wanted to return to the cellar, but she needed company before she dared to tackle it again. In the meantime, if she would be living upstairs for a few days, then it would help to get through some of the boxes on the landing. She carried one of them down, set it in the middle of the living room, and kneeled on the floor in front of it. Opening the lid, she began plucking a few things from the top at random. Out came clothes, old-style blouses, a couple of dresses, a christening gown. At first, she handled things carefully, one at a time. But after a while, she stood up, heaved the box onto its side, and spilled all the contents onto the floor. Then she picked through the mound in front of her, examining each item before putting everything, except the christening gown, back into the box they had come from. After she'd finished, she found a pen in her bag and wrote, "Charity," on the lid. One down, in half an hour. "Why have I avoided this for so long?" she asked herself, then went to get the next box. This one contained books. She pulled out the top layer so she could turn over the box, then tipped it upside down, searching through, glancing at titles and authors. There weren't many names she recognised, and they all looked dated. Besides, she didn't need any extra reading when there was a bookshelf of classics upstairs. She put one or two aside and began to pile the rest back into the box. When she had finished, she moved to the little alcove set into the living room wall, where, in addition to a small glass duck and sprigs of dried heather, there was another row of books. Crossword dictionaries, field guides for bird watching, and a few gardening encyclopedias. They all went into the box with the others. She paused as she came across a slim hardback covered by a dull grey dust jacket with raggedy edges, a black and white picture on the front of it. She read the title, "Ghosts of the Moors." The photograph featured a tall stone cross in the foreground and a shadowy stone bridge visible in the distance across a strip of moorland. The photo looked like it had been taken in twilight, so that the bridge was dimly lit, the low-lying hills behind it little more than shadows. She opened the book and began to read the introduction. "The North Yorkshire Moors, a place of many souls, those unborn, those departed, and the few who dwell in the scattered villages and wander the old monks' paths. People come and go, their lives ebbing and flowing like the river that cleaves its way through the valley. Yet, beneath their feet, the moors themselves are timeless, soaked in the love, grief, happiness, and despair that saturates the air and weeps down past the heather into the thickly layered earth. This place is one that ghosts wander to and through, since the untended, patient land embraces both the living and the dead, as the seasons spin perpetual circles within time's sticky web." Grace shuddered and turned the page, thumbing through the rest at random. The book was full of short chapters with titles like "The Hob on the Hill," "The Witch's Knoll," and "The Knights of Freeborough." Towards the back, she came across "The Bar Guest." She read the first few sentences. "A fearsome hound, with razor-sharp teeth and claws, seen shortly before the death of a local." She remembered the dream she'd had on her first night back. She could vividly picture that contorted face, smell its hot, meaty, panting breath. "The death of a local." Grace hastily closed the book and put it inside the charity box. She would be rid of that one as soon as possible.
"Just checking in,"
Annabelle said brightly the next morning when Grace answered the phone.
What's new in no man's land, then?
Grace laughed despite herself.
You'll be pleased to hear I'm making some progress. And I'm getting the kitchen wall knocked down this week.
So you're going ahead with renovating?
Yes. I'm not sure how much I'll do, but I'm really tempted to try and rent it as a holiday property. And it'll work much better with one big room downstairs.
Sounds good, Annabel said.
Then her tone changed.
Hang on. Are we going to be living in a dust box all Christmas?
Don't worry. Ben says he'll have it all sorted by then. It might not be too pretty, mind you.
Ben said so, did he? And who, tell me, is Ben?
He lives up the road. I told you he was coming over on Sunday about the work. He's done a great job on the plans.
Grace, please tell me you've checked out his credentials.
Grace immediately felt defensive. He showed me heaps of drawings. It's obvious he knows what he's talking about.
Grace!
Annabel shrieked through the phone.
For God's sake! He's about to knock down a wall in your home. Unless you want the whole ceiling to come crashing in, then I suggest you ask to see some references. Honestly, what are you thinking?
Grace was relieved she hadn't told Annabel that it was Ben they'd seen in the pub last Saturday, being unceremoniously told to leave. However, she knew her sister had a point. She had agreed to let Ben do the job without being thorough. She'd been grateful to find someone so easily, someone who talked like they knew what they were doing, and who could be left to get on with it.
Grace, are you listening to me?
Annabel was saying.
Before you let that man into your cottage with a large hammer, I want you to ask him for some background information. References, qualifications, experience, and I mean relevant experience. Promise me?
Grace knew Annabel would never leave her alone until she'd agreed, or, worse still, would phone their parents. So there was little option but to say, fine, I promise.
Ben was at the door soon after breakfast. Grace waited as he wandered around downstairs making notes, then began to study the wall that divided the kitchen and living room.
Millie sat on the floor, inspecting him closely.
As I suspected, solid stone, he said. I'll check upstairs, but I don't think it's load-bearing. I can always put a beam in for extra support if need be.
He looked at the furniture.
Anywhere we can move this to?
Grace thought for a moment. I suppose we could stack it in the cellar.
Well, you can leave that to me. If you clear those shelves in the corner and pack away everything in the kitchen, then I'll cover it all up and get cracking. I plan to have the wall down by Thursday and spend Friday clearing up. It might not be pretty over Christmas, but you'll have a lot bigger area and you'll be able to think more about what you might want to do with it next. Does that sound good to you?
As he waited for her reply, Grace knew it was now or never.
Ben, I'm sorry. I know I should have asked you this earlier. Do you have any references or qualifications you can show me?
He looked surprised rather than offended.
I'm really sorry, Grace, but I don't have anything with me. You know that I'm house-sitting, and I'm a long way from home right now. I can reassure you that I once worked as a labourer, even though it's been a while, and I'm a qualified architect. However, I can't actually prove anything without troubling people to go into my empty house and send me documents.
He sighed.
I completely understand why you're asking, but it might take me a while to get these things to you, particularly with Christmas round the corner. Would you rather find somebody else? I understand if you want to. It might be better for your peace of mind.
Grace's thoughts raced as he stood waiting for her answer. What should she do? The possibility of going back to square one appalled her, particularly when everything had fallen so easily into place. There weren't many alternatives around here, and she needed the help. Annabel was only worried because she didn't know Ben. He might be reticent, but he was kind to her and Millie, and so gentle with Bess.
I'd still like you to do it,
she said decisively.
Okay, then.
Ben picked up his coat.
You're putting your faith in me. I appreciate that. But you've got nothing to worry about.
As he spoke, Millie pulled herself up against the sofa and tried to reach Ben's papers.
No, Millie,
Grace said, hurrying over. But Millie ignored her and snatched them, flinging them aside and watching as they floated to the ground. Grace began picking them up, and Ben joined in. As they got to their feet, Grace handed over those she'd collected and caught Ben's eye. They were standing far too close, and he was looking at her so directly that a shiver ran through her.
Do you have any more questions before we get started?
His voice was a deep, susurrant burr. Grace stepped back.
No, I don't think so.
Then I'll be over tomorrow.
He moved past her, heading for the door. Grace saw him out and went back to Millie. As they began to play together, numerous questions about Ben began to run through her mind, but few had to do with the cottage. Chapter 13. By Wednesday evening, the downstairs of Hawthorne Cottage was a shambles. Ben had saved Grace from any thoughts of returning to the cellar by moving a pile of furniture down there to clear his workspace. Meanwhile, the fall of night had brought with it a howling wind, so this time Grace decided to drive up to Meredith's. She was glad she'd accepted Meredith's offer of a meal, now that her own kitchen was unusable. Grace was standing on the schoolhouse driveway, unbuckling Millie from her seat, when the front door swung open.
Come in,
Meredith said, ushering them both out of the cold. They could hear Pippa barking in another part of the interior. She followed Meredith through to the dining room. The curtains to the picture window were open, but night had fallen, and there was nothing to see beyond them this time, not even a light on the horizon or a star in the sky. Thank you so much for inviting us again. As Grace looked around, she noticed that the table was less extravagantly furnished this evening, with only two place settings.
Is Claire here?
She asked, her spirits waning at the thought of trying to make conversation with Meredith on her own.
No, Claire's gone to collect Jenny and bring her home for Christmas,
Meredith replied. All my girls will be here this year, although Veronica, my eldest, is staying in Ogden. This place is big, but it's not large enough for her brood and everybody else as well. She indicated the sofas.
Please, take a seat. I'll go and dish up.
Grace began to play with Millie, showing her the toys she'd brought, though it was obvious that Millie wanted to crawl away and begin investigating this interesting new space. Grace glanced around the softly lit room, with its thick chintz curtains and polished furniture. Everything looked precisely positioned, as though she had found herself on a stage set rather than in someone's home. She wondered if this room was singled out and kept pristine for entertaining, or whether the whole house was like this. Judging by how well Meredith had looked after Grace's cottage, it was probably the latter, she thought. She heard footsteps getting louder, and then Meredith re-entered the room, carrying two plates piled high with vegetables.
I've managed to borrow a high chair, she said, as she set down the food. So you can bring Millie over. Will she eat some roast chicken?
It might be messy, Grace warned, picking up Millie. Meredith motioned to the polished wooden floor.
It's easy enough to wipe.
They took their places at the table, and Meredith chopped up a few pieces of chicken and some vegetables, then presented them to Millie on a child's plate with a plastic knife and fork. Millie ignored the cutlery and picked up the meat with her fingers, looking thoughtful as she tested it with her teeth. Meredith took a sip of water.
So, Grace, she said, how are you getting on with the cottage? Found anything interesting?
Grace speared a perfect golden roast potato with her fork I haven't gone very far yet. It's been lots of books and clothes so far, but most of them mean little to me, I'm afraid. It's very odd sorting through people's belongings and making decisions when you didn't know them very well. Since I'm unaware of the history behind anything I'm looking at, I always have this feeling I might be missing something important.
There's not really much we own that is all that important, though, is there?
Meredith looked around the room, her eye falling on the mantelpiece of photographs.
I would be a lot less cluttered if it weren't for my girls. They practically handcuff me every time I suggest having a clear out. They don't want to live here anymore, but I think it gives them a sense of security to know that their childhood home is still here, the same as it always was. They come here to feel safe.
Grace put down her cutlery for a moment to encourage Millie to try her vegetables. She recalled the contents of the boxes that she'd sorted through so far, debating what Meredith might find interesting.
You know, I did find a book about local ghost stories.
Let me guess. Ghosts of the Moors.
Yes, Grace said, surprised. I'm sure that was the title.
And did you notice the author?
When Grace shook her head, Meredith got up, went across to a bookcase, pulled a slim volume from the shelf, and handed it over. Grace recognized the cover, and now she looked at the author's name.
C. Romano?
She regarded Meredith blankly. Should I know who that is? Meredith nodded and waited, but on seeing Grace's confusion, she said,
That's Connie Lockwood, maiden name Romano, Adam's grandmother.
Oh.
Grace looked down again at the slim volume in her hands. Millie's great-grandmother had written this. She supposed she had better take it out of the charity box. Meredith took the book and returned it to the shelf.
She presented all the villages.